I shrugged and kept quiet and drove another mile.
So what about you? You gonna rat me out?
I saw him touch his right ear, the one that was still there. It was clearly a completely subconscious gesture.
You saved my ass.
I'm not gonna rat you out. Okay. My name is Reacher. We spent a few minutes cutting across a tiny corner of Vermont and then struck out north and east across New Hampshire, settled in for the long, long drive. The adrenaline drained away, and the kid got over his state of shock, and we both ended up a little down and sleepy. I cracked the window to get some air in and some perfume out. It made the car noisy, but it kept me awake. We talked a little. Richard Beck told me he was 20 years old. He was in his junior year. He was majoring in some kind of contemporary art expression thing that sounded a lot like finger painting to me. He wasn't good at relationships. He was an only child. There was a lot of ambivalence about his family. They were clearly some kind of tight, close-knit clan, and half of him wanted out and the other half needed to be in. He was clearly very traumatized by the previous kidnap. It made me wonder whether something had been done to him apart from the ear thing. Maybe something much worse. I told him about the army. I laid it on pretty thick about my bodyguarding qualifications. I wanted him to feel he was in good hands. At least temporarily. I drove fast and steady. The Maxima had just been filled. We didn't need to stop for gas. He didn't want lunch. I stopped once to use a men's room. Left the engine running so I wouldn't have to fiddle with the ignition wires again. Came back to the car and found him inert inside it. We got back on the road and passed by Concord in New Hampshire and headed toward Portland in Maine. Time passed. He got more relaxed the closer we got to home, but he got quieter, too. Ambivalence. We crossed the state line, and then about 20 miles short of Portland, he squirmed around and checked the view out of the back very carefully and told me to take the next exit. We turned onto a narrow road heading due east toward the Atlantic. It passed under I-95 and then ran more than 15 miles across granite headlands to the sea. It was the kind of landscape that would have looked great in summer. But it was still cold and raw. There were trees stunted by salt winds and exposed rock outcrops where gales and storm tides had scoured the dirt away. The road twisted and turned like it was trying to fight its way as far east as it could get. I glimpsed the ocean ahead. It was as gray as iron. The road pushed on past inlets to the left and right. I saw small beaches made of gritty sand. Then the road curved left, and immediately right, and rose up onto a headland shaped like the palm of a hand. The palm narrowed abruptly into a single finger, jutting directly out to sea. It was a rock peninsula, maybe 100 yards wide and half a mile long. I could feel the wind buffeting the car. I drove out onto the peninsula and saw a line of bent and stunted evergreen trees that were trying to hide a high granite wall, but weren't quite tall enough or thick enough to succeed. The wall was maybe 8 feet tall. It was topped with big coils of razor wire. It had security lights mounted at intervals. It ran laterally all the way across the 100-yard width of the finger. It canted down suddenly at the ends and ran all the way into the sea, where its massive foundations were built on huge stone blocks. The blocks were mossy with seaweed. There was an iron gate set in the wall, dead center. It was closed.
This is it. This is where I live.
The road led straight to the gate. Behind the gate, it changed to a long, straight driveway. At the end of the driveway was a gray stone house. I could see it there, at the end of the finger, right out in the ocean. Right beside the gate was a one-story lodge. Same design and same stone as the house, but much smaller and lower. It shared its foundations with the wall. I slowed and stopped the car in front of the gate.
"Honk the horn," Richard Beck said.
The Maxima had a little bugle shape on the airbag lid. I pressed on it with one finger, and the horn beeped politely. I saw a surveillance camera on the gatepost tilt and pan. It was like a little glass eye looking at me. There was a long pause, and the lodge door opened. A guy in a dark suit stepped out. Clearly, the suit came from a big and tall store, and was probably the largest size it had ever offered, but even so, It was very tight in the shoulders and short in the arms for its owner. He was way bigger than me, which put him firmly in the freak category. He was a giant. He walked up close to his side of the gate and stared out. He spent a long time looking at me, and a short time looking at the kid. Then he unlocked the gate and pulled it open.
"Drive straight up to the house," Richard told me. "Don't stop here. I don't like that guy very much."
I drove through the gate, didn't stop, but I drove slow and looked around. The first thing you do going into a place is to look for your way out. The wall ran all the way into rough water on both sides. It was too high to jump, and the razor wire along the top made it impossible to climb. There was a cleared area maybe 30 yards deep behind it, like no man's land or a minefield. The security lights were set to cover all of it. There was no way out except through the gate. The giant was closing it behind us. I could see him in the mirror. It was a long drive up to the house. Gray ocean on three sides. The house was a big old pile. Maybe some sea captain's place from way back when killing whales made people respectable fortunes. It was all stone, with intricate beadings and cornices and folds. All the north-facing surfaces were covered in gray lichen. The rest was spotted with green. It was three stories high. It had a dozen chimneys. The roof line was complex. There were gables all over the place with short gutters and dozens of fat iron pipes to drain the rainwater away. The front door was oak and was banded and studded with iron. The driveway widened into a carriage circle. I followed it around, counterclockwise, and stopped right in front of the door. The door opened, and another guy in a dark suit stepped out. He was about my size, which made him a lot smaller than the guy in the lodge, but I didn't like him any better. He had a stone face and blank eyes. He opened the Maximus passenger door like he had been expecting to see it, which I guessed he was, because the big guy in the lodge would have called ahead.
"Will you wait here?"
Richard asked me. He slipped out of the car and walked away into the gloom inside the house, and the guy in the suit closed the oak door from the outside and took up station right in front of it. He wasn't looking at me, but I knew I was somewhere in his peripheral vision. I broke the wire connection under the steering column, turned the motor off, and waited. It was a reasonably long wait, probably close to 40 minutes. Without the engine running, the car grew cold. It rocked gently in the sea breeze eddying around the house. I stared straight ahead through the windshield. I was facing northeast, and the air was whipped and clear. I could see the coastline curving in from the left. I could see a faint brown smudge in the air about 20 miles away. Probably pollution coming up out of Portland. The city itself was hidden behind a headland.